on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial portfolio manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. My name is Luke Guerrero, and it is Friday, October 18th, 2024. Now, the markets are constantly changing, and all around us, we can see economic changes, we can see political changes, and those things are creating, in and of themselves, different challenges. And so now is not the time to lose focus. And that's why the objective for this podcast and radio program is to help you become a better and more informed investor. And when we meet 5 days a week, to accomplish that goal, we bring a mix of educational items and actionable items, things that are hot button issues of the day, things that can help guide investors on a long-term journey towards their financial freedom. But most importantly, your contributions in the form of questions, comments on iTunes, reviews, through voicemails, through live calls, are always the most important part of the InvestTalk mission because you move the conversation forward. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics. But first, let's tackle this caller question.
Hi, this is Brayton from Central California. Calling in, appreciate you guys' show and everything you guys do. I was hoping I could get you guys to look at Mosaic Company, ticker is MOS. I've had it for a while. It's just been kind of grinding down lower, you know, down to like 26 and change today. I was wondering if you guys thought this was a chance for the turnaround or pick up more here or just sell it and move on. I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
So ticker MOS, Mosaic Company, is a chemical company that mines, produces, and distributes essentially fertilizer. And the company has been struggling recently. The shares have declined 20% since July, and that's primarily not the company's fault. It's really due to what has happened with the cost of fertilizer. So why has fertilizer fallen? Well, in the wake of the war in Ukraine in 2022, that hurt supplies. There was a lot lower demand as well in 2022, but after supplies, or rather the supply chain was hurt, there was a large increase in production capacity. So globally, a lot of investment was made, and now there's kind of an oversupply of fertilizer. Not only that, the input cost of mining, or not mining, but creating that fertilizer has gone down. And so as the prices have fallen, companies who are predominantly involved in that have also seen their revenues kind of collapse as well. Now, with that being said, it hasn't been all bad with Mosaic. You can see their shares outstanding has fallen from 380 million to 320 million since 2022. So when their price has fallen, they saw that as an opportunity to return value back to shareholders at a pretty advantageous price for the company. They also pay a solid dividend, 3.23%. Now, that dividend has risen since the events that I mentioned occurred. Before the war in Ukraine, it was about 60 basis points was the dividend yield, and it rose to 1.1% and then 2.1%, projected to be about 3.2% this year. Now, the rise was not just due to the change in share price. Dividend per share has also increased from 10 cents, projected to be 85 cents this year. And some of that has been helped along by the share buybacks. But I mean, that's also pretty solid for the company as well. But since 2022, cash flow has fallen, profitability has fallen, and the chart looks pretty bad, if I had to say so myself. The relative strength is really low, and it's a downtrend that has not stopped. It's stalled at the 24 to 26 range. It's been trading sideways since September. But I think the issue here is one that is out of this company's control. And that is, in the wake of that war, global supply was increased. And there was a lot of investment globally to deal with the fact that there were supply chain issues because of that war. And this company is feeling those effects. It's going to feel the effect for some time. It's trading at 10 times forward-looking earnings, which is not far below 11 times forward-looking earnings. But overall, I just think the dynamics out there, it's probably not worth holding on to this name. I would most likely move on, look for opportunities elsewhere. There are plenty of materials companies that are doing well, that are going to do well over the next 6 months. I just don't think fertilizer ones are really one of them. Thanks for the call. We got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and here's some of what we have planned for you. My main focus point today concerns this topic: 9 costly retirement investment mistakes to avoid. Failing to diversify your portfolio and overlooking the effects of inflation are 2 of the 9 common investing blunders. We will talk about those 2, as well as the other 7 a little bit later on. We'll also touch on the IMF's opinion on a soft landing, but also future growth and the future debt burden of countries around the globe. Speaking of soft landing, we'll discuss again the possibility of what a soft landing scenario is doing to credit spreads and how some people are searching for yield in the wake of collapsing spreads. Should we have time at the end of the show? A reckoning in the chip space. It seems like the AI honeymoon might finally be over, as evidenced by some market reaction to some less than stellar earnings earlier this week. We also have a caller voice bank question ready to play, including one on SNOXX, SNOX, the Schwab Treasury Obligations Money Market Fund, and one on a little company called Amazon. Also, some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. And of course, I welcome your finance investment questions now or anytime throughout the show. We're going to a new break, and on the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity and take your questions on the InvestTalk Anytime listener line. You know the number, 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk is made better when listeners add their voices.
This is Nick from Seattle.
Hey, this is Steve out of Charleston, South Carolina.
Could you comment on Barrick Gold, G-O-L-D?
And Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are always ready to provide unbiased answers.
Be patient. Don't rush into anything. Understand what you own.
I would probably trim here, but I don't see any reason why you'd want to sell out of it.
Voice bank calls are very important, but so are the spontaneous questions that come in during the InvestTalk live stream.
Let's pivot over to a live call. We love those.
Looks like we got our first live call. I love live calls.
If you've never called, what are you waiting for?
Let's go take another live call.
Tell your friends, live a little, live a little.
It's like we got a live call.
Call InvestTalk, weekdays from 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific Time.
That makes sense?
Yeah, it sure does. I appreciate the advice.
888-99-CHART. It's official. We've now crossed over the 59 million download mark. InvestTalk. Call anytime. 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk about the market today and wrap up this week of trading. U.S. stocks closed mostly higher. The Dow up 9 basis points. S&P 500 up 40 basis points. NASDAQ up 63. Russell 2000 small caps down 21 basis points. The S&P closed at a fresh all-time high and logged its 6th straight week of gains. Big tech mostly higher, with Apple the standout on the day. Netflix boosted the comm services. Auto parts also another bright spot in the market. Industrial metals were helped by the latest bounce in China stimulus sentiment as well. Energy, worst performing sector on weak oil, and it's been a pretty bad week for oil. Dollar index down 30 basis points. Gold finishing up 80 basis points. Crude oil settling down 2%, finishing the week more than 9% lower. Pretty quiet overall ahead of the coming, I'd say, 2 peak weeks of Q3 earnings season leading into the U.S. election. September housing starts, though, came in a bit ahead of consensus, while permits were light of expectations. Followed some mixed housing data this week after a slight uptick in home builder sentiment, but a big weekly decline in mortgage applications. Bullish talking points for the week: more support for the soft no landing narrative from Key Thursday macro data. Core retail sales rose as stronger than expected. Initial claims fell most in 3 months. Atlanta Fed GDP now pointing to a 3.4% growth in Q3, up from 3.2% last week. Netflix beat, as I mentioned. Apple's iPhone rebound in China, also positive signs for the retail side. And banking outperformance continued, with results highlighting capital markets improvements, stable credit, and a resilient consumer. On the bear side, growth, momentum, semis all came under pressure as we saw more of a rotation out of them, and especially with Tuesday's ASML big miss. The semi space saw some negative geopolitical headlines, the White House now considering restrictions on AI chip exports to some countries, and China calling for a security review of Intel products that are sold in the country. Luxury retail came under heightened scrutiny as LVMH, Louis Vuitton, Moet Hennessy missed. Beijing Still seems like they don't have any appetite for that bazooka-like approach that they implemented during the financial crisis. Fed rate cut expectations continuing to moderate. Looking ahead to next week, very quiet on the economic calendar, though the Beige Book is out on Wednesday and flash PMIs are set to hit on Thursday. Earnings calendar, the big focus next week, 143 out of the 500, or like 490-something names in the S&P 500 are scheduled to report. That's the market today. Now, as you know, we offer this audio podcast in video form on the InvestTalk YouTube channel. And when you head over there and you look at our charts and you look at our faces and a question pops in your head, there's no need to call. You can leave your question right there in the comment section. Let's get to one right now from BlackBerry7. BlackBerry7. The question is on Gib.A, G-I-B.A. It says, what is your opinion on CGI Inc.? Well, let's pull that up right now on FactSet. And so CGI Inc. is a information technology company. They work in business processing. So they provide business consulting, systems integration, IT outsourcing services, IT management, and really just enterprise digitalization, broadly speaking. They've been buying back shares pretty consistently for the past 5 years, down from 270 million. Just about 225 million cash flow, looks very solid over the past 3 years as well. Profitability seems to be on an upswing. It's a $35 billion market cap company, does not pay a dividend, has pretty minimal debt, only about $3 billion in terms of debt. Its relative strength is fine, nothing too crazy, but it's been in an uptrend since about May. I think one of the best things that I'm seeing here is that the company seems to be improving margins pretty steadily from about 9.2% before the pandemic, pre-pandemic. Now it's projected to be 11.7% in terms of net margin this year, EBITDA margin up from about 18 to 20 in that same amount of time. All things that look solid on that front. Again, I like that the free cash flow is improving as well. Now, in terms of their valuation, it looks like they're a little bit overpriced on a price-to-earnings perspective relative to the past 5 years. Their growth has also kind of slowed, I would say, about 4.4% on an annualized basis going back to 2018, though only projected to go from $14.2 billion to $14.6 billion this year. You know, I think one issue here is this is not a very sticky customer base. It's pretty, I wouldn't say easy to break into, but the barriers to entry are low. And you've already seen growth taper off here and margins starting to flatten from where their long-term or their short-term trend, positive trend has been. And so even though I see a company with very little debt, very little short interest, they're buying back shares, I'm just kind of worried about that growth picture and that from a relative basis, it doesn't seem all that cheap. Now, it's not too expensive. I would not say it's expensive, but I would keep this on my watch list for now. I don't think now is a buy point. I'd probably hold this. I wouldn't sell it. But for now, I would wait to see if this pairs back a little bit, especially since they have run up from about 135 to where they are at 160 right now. This is ripe for a pullback. Thanks for watching. Let's keep things moving. Get to another caller question.
Hi there. This is Daniel from Brooklyn. I'm curious of what you think of VBR Small Cap Value ETF from Vanguard. Wondering whether you like it. I'm trying to work out which of the small cap value ETFs to buy. And I've got other Vanguard stocks. I like that company. So I was thinking I'd go with VBR. Would love to know your thoughts. Thank you for the show.
So the Vanguard Small Cap Value Fund, VBR, value ETF that is, tracks the MSCI Value Index, tracks the CRSP Small Cap Index. And so the way they look at value is they take small cap stocks and they look at some fundamental criteria like price to book, forward earnings or price, historic EPS. So they're doing some sort of combination of all of these metrics. Now, I would argue that some of these are cash flow metrics, so you might have some profitability slipped in there. That may skew it more towards higher profitability and ignore some of those value characteristics. And What would tend to agree with me here is that their price to book is 1.9 versus the benchmark of about 1.58. Price to cash flow, though, is below. So it looks to me like they're doing a little bit more towards the profitability side and less towards the value side. Now, that's not bad. I like that. Historically, we do like profitable companies over unprofitable ones. They tend to have a little bit more of that expected return difference than value versus growth. Now, interestingly enough, it's got about 17% in large caps, which leads me to believe this is a very passively managed index. Looks like they undergo a quarterly reconstitution and rebalance. So what you have here is style drift. You know, with boundary funds being funds that aren't just core funds, so not just small caps, but value rather than growth, I would actually look for a more active ETF. You're going to pay more than the 7 basis points, but the benefit there is you don't necessarily get that style drift. When things start to migrate, they sell off, you take profits. So I look for a actively managed ETF. If you're looking at U.S. small caps, you can probably get it for 30, 40 basis points. Thanks for the call. Now we're moving into a break, and still to come, I will tackle more of your voice bank calls and get to the main focus point on this podcast and radio show on AM 1220. So stay with me.
Weekend is here or almost here, but you've got finance and investment questions, so step up and call in. Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
Today, let's talk about something on the minds of many investors, and that is retiring comfortably. After Bankrate's 2024 Retirement Savings Survey, more than half of American workers feel like they're behind on their retirement savings, with 48% doubting they'll even reach their financial goals at all. So with that in mind, let's explore 9 of the most common retirement savings mistakes that people make and how you can hope to avoid them. First up is failing to plan. This is the most basic one. A financially secure retirement won't just happen by accident. It doesn't just fall out of the sky. You need a roadmap that includes figuring out how much to save, maximizing your savings opportunities through your 401k, through IRAs, through brokerage accounts, understanding the benefits of the account tax diversity, and deciding where to invest your money to grow it for the long term. And so one way to do that is many people find working with a financial advisor, financial professional, is helpful in navigating those decisions. Second is missing out on tax breaks. And by that, I mean that special retirement accounts, such as IRAs and 401ks, offer tax advantages that can speed up your savings. And so in some cases, lower income savers can even claim a saver's credit to reduce their tax bill. These tools are designed to help you grow your money faster. So it's important that you take full advantage of them and understand that they're even available at all. Mistake number 3 is not getting your full employer match. Many companies offer matching contributions to their 401k plans. Essentially free money. If you don't contribute enough to qualify for the full match, you're leaving easy returns on the table. Number 4, the fourth misstep, is simply not saving or not saving enough. Even with employer matches, many workers aren't putting away what they need. Experts recommend saving around 9% of your income, starting in your mid-20s, to retire comfortably at 67. Start later, and you'll need to save more. Number 5, it's forgetting about inflation. Inflation erodes purchasing power. Certainly, most of us now are not forgetting about inflation. It is on the top of the mind for a lot of people, but it erodes your purchasing power. So it's critical to invest in assets that can outpace it. Relying solely on savings accounts or certificates of deposit or low-yielding bonds could leave you falling behind over time. Number 6, being too conservative. Stocks can feel risky, but they're historically providing solid long-term returns. So if you're decades away from retirement, you need the growth to build a sizable nest egg. We talk about this in our wealth webinar on 401k investing, about the glide path of how your allocation should change over time. On the flip side, staying too risky as retirement approaches is mistake number 7. Again, that glide path, when you near retirement, it's wise to shift towards those safer assets because you need the capital preservation rather than the capital growth. Number 8, high investment fees are another trap to avoid. Seemingly small fee, 1.5%, 2%, seems small, but that can cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars over time due to loss compounding. Stick with low-cost funds It'll help you keep more of your returns. Finally, accumulating too much debt can derail retirement plans. So paying off loans before retirement means more of your money can go towards saving and living comfortably. The bottom line, saving for retirement doesn't have to be overwhelming. But if you don't want it to be, you want to make sure you're avoiding these 9 common mistakes and pitfalls. And if you do, you'll be well on your way to a financially secure future. Now, if you don't know, it's Friday, and we love Fridays. Everybody loves Friday. But I especially love Friday because we get to prep you for the weekend's KPP Premium newsletter that will be distributed tomorrow. And this week, in the KPP Insights section, we talk about credit spreads. What the heck is a credit spread? I'm always talking about credit spreads. What do they tell you? What is the definition of them? What does it mean? We'll get into all of that in the stock ideas section. We mentioned a global security products company, and we also mentioned a home improvement building products company. Lastly, in the portfolio management section, we touched on a couple things. We talk about state-owned enterprises, variable interest entities or VIEs, and American depository receipts, which you most likely know as ADRs. If any of that sounds interesting, if even one part of it, if all of it sounds interesting, head over to investtalk.com and subscribe. The newsletter will come to your inbox every Saturday morning. Here comes another caller question from our 24/7 voice bank line, 888-99-CHART.
Hey guys, this is Jordan from Minnesota. I'm just calling to get your thoughts on Amazon. I'm just wondering if this is something that I can put some money into and hold it for 20 plus years and we'll do pretty well on. Thanks.
So the question is about Amazon. I don't think I have to refresh anybody on what Amazon is. Amazon is a very large company, and it's kind of, I would say, transitioning, right? They've done very well in the past year, up 47% the past 52 weeks. But the reason why Amazon grew so quickly was because it revolutionized e-commerce and spread out in such a way that it was able to capture a bunch of markets, right? It started as a bookstore. It's certainly more than a bookstore now. But over the past 5-10 years, what they've done is transition towards their largest growth area, which is cloud computing and enterprise. And so they've ingrained themselves so much within business technology that I think that is probably the best area of growth there. Now, there's been a little bit of a rundown, and it's still expensive, though, on a price-to-book basis. It's well below its 5-year average. Don't be scared by that 33-time forward-looking price-to-earnings. I think that generally, it has run up a lot this year. It is ripe for a pullback, but you're talking about the long term. And I think how it's ingrained itself within business computing, enterprise, cloud software is really going to set it up for the next 10 years. So I do like Amazon. Thanks for the call. On the next Invest Talk, we will drill down on this story. Grocery prices are down since 2019. Down. But many consumers resent rising costs, and the psychological effects of price perceptions are real. That's Monday. But for now, I'm Luke Guerrero.
You've got finance and investment questions, and Luke Guerrero is ready to provide his unbiased answers. Call now or anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Now, as I already mentioned, it is Friday, and we do a couple things on Friday. The first is go over the KPP Premium newsletter, but the second one is to have a quick rundown of key benchmark numbers, so let's dive into those right now. The 10-year Treasury yield was at 3.961% today. For perspective, last week, that number was 3.945. 11 weeks back, it was 3.882, 49 weeks ago, 5.05, 147 weeks ago. Close to 3 years ago, it was at 64 basis points. The 10-year Treasury yield was at just over 4% at 4.073 today. Last week, it was at 4.079. 7 weeks ago, it was at 3.921. 49 weeks back, it was at 4.63. And 143 weeks ago, that number was 1.762%. Gold was priced at $2,716 per ounce today. Last week, that number was $2,659. 49 weeks back, it was at $1,935. And 137 weeks ago, it was at $1,806. Silver today was at $3,302 per ounce. Last week, that number was $3,155. 35 weeks ago, it was at $2,280. And 130 weeks ago is $23.94. Oil was selling for $69.83 per barrel today. Last week, the number was $75.69. 3 weeks back, it was $67.79. 45 weeks ago, it was $74.30. And 145 weeks ago, $66.62. The national average for a gallon of regular gasoline is $3.19, a 1 cent decrease from last week. 72 weeks back, it was $3.56. And 121 weeks ago, $4.25. California, it was averaging $4.65 per gallon, also a 1 cent decrease from last week. 51 weeks ago, almost 1 year, is at $5.32. 127 weeks back, it was all the way up at $5.87. For comparison, in New Mexico, gas was averaging $2.98 per gallon today. That is $1.67 less than gas in California. So I was seeing recently that there was an update from the International Monetary Fund, or the IMF. And so the IMF's managing director, Kristalina Georgieva, provided a mixed outlook for the global economy, highlighting both progress and challenges moving forward. Let's start with the good news. The good news is inflation rates are falling, not just in the US, but globally, and the feared global recession hasn't materialized. But even in spite of this, sluggish growth and rising trade barriers still threaten economic stability. In her speech ahead of the IMF's annual meeting in Washington, Georgieva emphasized that inflation, which spiked during the pandemic and following Russia's invasion of the Ukraine, is now receding. Central banks across the globe have raised interest rates to curb inflation, but the IMF notes that these measures have managed to cool inflation without causing major unemployment or triggering a global contraction. In Europe, inflation fell to 1.7% in September, marking the first time it's been below the European Central Bank's 2% target since 2021. The U.S. has also seen inflation ease to 2.4%, offering some relief to consumers and to businesses alike. Now, while this progress is encouraging, the road ahead is not without obstacles. A significant challenge is managing government debt, which has ballooned during the pandemic. The IMF projects that by the end of this decade, global debt will likely equal the world's total economic output. If total growth underperforms or interest payments rise faster than expected, countries could hit this threshold even sooner. Georgieva urged governments to act now, cautioning that even fiscally conservative political groups are shifting towards higher spending patterns, which could worsen debt burdens. Now, on the trade front, rising barriers between major economies are dampening global prospects. And so there was some criticism with moves like what the European Union's doing with its tariffs on Chinese electrical vehicles. The IMF described these actions as pouring cold water on an already lukewarm world economy. Now, overall, while inflation is easing, growth remains slow, and trade tensions continue to rise, the message was clear. Governments must act responsibly to manage debt, reduce trade barriers, and foster international cooperation to prevent further economic disruptions. As the IMF prepares to release new growth forecasts next week, something we will certainly be paying attention to, the focus will remain on how that may influence policymakers to navigate threats at home from an economic perspective versus fostering an interdependent global economy. This is InvestTalk. Now let's swing back to the InvestTalk voice bank for a question that came in earlier on 888-99-CHART.
Hey, InvestTalk. I had a question about money market funds. I currently own the Schwab Money Market Fund. The ticker is SNOXX. My question's about the yield on it. It looks like it's come down to about like 4.5%. Also see there's a expense ratio or some type of fee associated with owning it at about 0.4%. So my question is, what would be like the net yield or percent yield that I'm getting over the course of the year and how that fee kind of factors into it? Is it already factored in or is that like an addition to? So it's almost kind of misleading the way they present it. Hopefully that makes sense. I'm trying to look for more competitive yields now that rates have come down for just some of that extra cash. And I wasn't quite sure on how they report it. I'll listen on the show. Thanks as always.
So SNOXX is a rather large money market fund. And generally, you're probably not going to find much difference in terms of yield between some of these larger money market funds. And so the core of your question is, well, it says there's a 30 basis point expense ratio net, 19 basis point management fee. But the yield says X percent. So am I getting X percent minus this management fee? And the answer is no. When money market funds are generally telling you what their yield is, that's taking into consideration that fee. So if you look at yield, again, generally it's reported, and especially within the real, you know, your Morningstars, your whatever data sources, generally is going to be reported net of fees. So that should make the math pretty easy for you. Thanks for the call. Looks like we got time to play two in a row.
Hey guys, love the podcast. I have a question about ExxonMobil, ticker symbol XOM, looking to buy it. Let me know what y'all think. Thank y'all.
ExxonMobil is a name that we hold for clients. I think we bought a lot of it down at the 100 level back in whenever that was, back probably at the beginning of the year. And we've been holding it ever since, and certainly it had a had a run-up more recently as we saw some, say, hesitation, some hesitance, some anxiety about what might happen in the Middle East, though that's come down. We mentioned at the top of the show, oil is down 9% this week. And we've also mentioned over time about how in a normal situation, when you see tensions rising in the Middle East, what you might expect is a pretty high spike in the price of oil. So what has artificially depressed this? Well, as discussed, you know, one of the big issues is that a couple countries in OPEC Plus are, say, ignoring supply quotas. And we're also producing more oil than we ever have in the United States. And so wasn't really much of an effect on oil prices. It did. There was a small spike in oil prices, but they've since come down as tensions have started to ease. So we own a couple oil names. Like I said, this is one that we do own. The reason why? It's just a cash machine. It's a free cash flow, absolute behemoth machine. I would say that over the next 6 months, given again those lack of supply constraints, given what is likely to be still depressed Chinese demand for oil, you're probably not going to see oil at the $80, $90, $100 a barrel like we were seeing a while back. And so what that gives you is an opportunity to buy some of these names, an opportunity to see energy bottom out, see oil companies bottom out. And so if you're looking for a large cap oil name, one of the largest cap oil names, we like Exxon. We like the diversity of their business, the geographic diversity of their business. We like that they are also doing some investments in alternative technology, alternative energy as well. And yeah, I mean, it's a solid company. Again, just absolute cash machine. Thanks for the call. Here's another question from our InvestTalk YouTube channel, this one on TXG. So let's pull up a TXG here, and that is 10X Genomics Inc. So what is 10X Genomics Inc.? Well, it develops tools to advance scientific research and human health by analyzing biological systems. Looks like they have several products that include single cell gene expression tools, various CRISPR screening tools. And overall, what they do is they use their products, their technology, to help research in fields from oncology to immunology to neuroscience all over the place. Now, 10X, again, TXG, say they have impressive products. And not only do they have impressive products, they honestly have a not horrifying looking balance sheet. Only about $89 million of debt on about a $1.7 billion market cap company. But I think if you listen to this show, and you might have expected from the way I've been talking about this and the product line that it is likely that this company does not make money. And boy, would you be correct. Negative net margin projected to be about 25% this year. And it's been all over the place. Now, revenue's up. And their products are, again, very interesting and are in hot areas of medtech, hot areas of biotech. That will likely be on the forefront of research going forward. But from all projections that I've seen, this company is not supposed to be profitable until at least 2028, maybe even later. And so sitting on developing technology company that could easily be replaced by some other advancement before this company ever turns profitable. There is something to be said about inertia in the marketplace, and first to market is generally can be something that holds on to market share, but we talk about this all the time. Despite this revenue growth, one of C's rules, don't buy companies that don't make money. And why is that? Because historically, they tend to underperform. You could catch the 1 in 100, but it seems like a pretty risky play for me. And on top of that, they're diluting shareholders from 100 million shares outstanding to 120. Got about 7.5% short interest. I don't know. It's another biotech story of a company that doesn't make money, doesn't issue debt, but issues a lot of shares. Thanks for the call. We already talked a little bit about what the IMF thought about the soft landing scenario, but let's dive into how it's manifesting itself in the bond market. And so investors are driving corporate bond yields closer to U.S. Treasuries. And what that means is credit spreads are narrowing. In fact, they're narrowing to their lowest levels in nearly 20 years. And that in and of itself is a signal of confidence in a soft landing for the U.S. economy. Why? Smaller credit spreads imply that investors are demanding less return to take on credit risk. Something we will explain more in depth in the newsletter. Now, the spread between investment-grade corporate bonds and treasuries dropped to just 83 basis points this week, the tightest margin since March of 2005. In the high-yield or junk bond market, spreads have fallen to 2.89 percentage points, a level not seen since mid-2007. And so tight spreads like these generally, again, reflect optimism. They indicate investors believe, in this case, the Federal Reserve will manage inflation without pushing the economy into recession, and in turn, pushing some of these companies to default. A scenario that could make it, again, easier for companies to repay their debt. The Fed's recent decision to cut interest rates for the first time since 2020 has fueled further expectations of additional cuts, though there has been some market repricing in the interim. But that's boosted both government and corporate bonds. And so right now, there seems to be a surge in demand for corporate debt, which is far outpacing the new supply of bonds. And this enthusiasm extends beyond treasuries. Investors are showing strong appetite for credit risk. The worry, however, is too much of a rational thing becomes irrational. In layman's terms, the market could be overbought. And so what happens if the market's overbought? What happens if investors are wrong? Well, investors have been buying into the belief that the economy is on a stable path. And so it'd be a pretty rude awakening if conditions start to deteriorate, even in a slight enough way to change the null hypothesis about what could happen. So even though spreads have tightened, borrowing costs still remain higher than they were during the decade of near zero interest rates following the 2008 financial crisis. The average yield on high yield bonds now stands at 7.29%, a noticeable rise from under 5% just 3 years ago. This has drawn yield-hungry investors back into the market, chasing returns, despite the thinner protection against defaults provided by today's spreads. And so the bond market's enthusiasm, I would say more than anything, kind of reflects this optimism, right, about the Fed's, honestly, past performance, but also its future ability to navigate economic changes, economic challenges, whatever may present itself over the next 6 months to a year. Still, it's important to note that this is potentially a pivotal time. There's a U.S. presidential election on the horizon. There's still tensions that could re-rise in the Middle East. There's economic turbulence ahead. And so it may be worth it to take a more cautious stance. If inflation persists or growth falters, today's rosy assumptions could quickly unravel, leaving investors exposed to higher risk than they anticipated. This is Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and we have one goal here: to help you achieve your financial freedom. And our work continues after this break before we all head off into the weekend. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, I was wondering if you could give me your opinion on Industrial Logic's Properties Trust, ILPT. Thanks very much. Bye.
So Industrial Logics Property Trust, ILPT, owns and leases industrial and logistic properties within the United States. It's a REIT, real estate investment trust. And if you're looking or watching rather on YouTube, what you'll see is relative strength compared to the S&P 500 just tanked, just absolutely fell off of a cliff at the end of 2021. Why did it happen? Well, they had some poorly timed acquisitions that didn't work out too well. But the primary issue of why the stock is down so much, it's trading at $4 a share from, you know, a couple years ago, it was trading at 37. Back in 2020, it was trading at $24 a share. All the way up to 38 is where it got to before it started falling off. And the reason why is they have a lot of debt. Now, in 2021, they had $841 million in debt. And they did that acquisition. They had $4.2 billion in debt in 2022. Now they have $4.3 to $8 billion. Interest coverage ratio, 51%, 0.51, not even one. What they're earning can't even cover their debts. And so what we have here is a $283 million market cap REIT that has far too much debt. It is unsustainable. The balance sheet is horrendous. It just didn't work out. And the real estate sector generally does run on debt financing. But this is a company that overextended. It's up 75% in the past 52 weeks, past trailing one-year time frame. But it's not really showing any technical strength at all whatsoever. And until they deal somehow with how much debt they have on their balance sheet, that maybe it wasn't their fault. You know, it's sometimes things happen when you plan acquisitions. It doesn't always work out. But either way, if you're looking to get into the REIT space, I think you should be looking for one that is far more stable. This looks like a deal. It looks like a bargain. Juicy 9.7% dividend yield. But it's like that for a reason. By the way, it was 30% back in 2022. Their dividend per share has fallen from $1.32 at the peak to 4 cents per share. Remember, dividends are not set in stone. And it certainly was not the case for this one. So I would have to pass on this guy. Thanks for the call. Before we head off, I wanted to briefly touch on the demand for AI chips because it has been surging, yet it's creating a challenging environment for manufacturers and semiconductor equipment companies. The latest earnings reports from key players in the sector reflect this complex dynamic where booming demand for AI technology doesn't necessarily translate into success for every company involved in the chip supply chain. TSMC, Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, delivered encouraging results projecting that revenue from AI processors, including NVIDIA's highly sought-after chips, will triple this year. Meanwhile, on the other side, Dutch equipment maker ASML delivered a disappointing report. Orders for ASML's crucial chip-making equipment totaled just $2.8 billion in the third quarter, less than half of Wall Street's expectations. This miss, coupled with reduced revenue forecasts for next year, sent shockwaves through the entire industry, wiped out 20% of ASML's value just over 2 days. And it didn't just stay in Europe. The ripple effect hit U.S. semiconductor equipment. The overall demand for chip-making equipment, it's important to note, is expected to surpass about $100 billion globally this year. But I think what people don't realize, what they don't think about, is a lot of that's concentrated. TSMC, Intel, Samsung account for a large share of that. TSMC alone, I think, is about $30 billion of it. China is another complicating factor. It ramped up spending to bolster its domestic chip industry. Why? Because the U.S. restricts its access to advanced technologies. But analysts have long been warning that China's spending surge would not be sustainable. And that's manifested itself. And so while AI demand boosts stocks like NVIDIA, Micron, Broadcom, the outlook for equipment makers is less straightforward. They face challenges from soft PC demand, slow smartphone sales, and a sluggish auto market. And so even after this week's stock drops, these companies are trading at a 10% premium to their average forward-looking earnings. So obviously there's still a little bit of lingering optimism there, but there is a mistake in assuming that AI's runaway success will benefit the entire chip market equally. While NVIDIA may continue to thrive, it's clear that not every player in the space will ride the same wave. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another InvestTalk program. We thank you for listening, we thank you for watching, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. Be sure to leave us a rate and review. And if you want to check us out in video form, head over to YouTube and check out our YouTube channel. That's Invest Talk with two T's. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.